So for our first Dharma talk of our coming and going session 2015, I'm going to talk a little bit about one of the newer chants in our new sutra book. And this one is from one of our direct Zen ancestors. I particularly like it and feel that it's somehow or other a guide for us all about how to practice that maybe is a part of practice that we don't always emphasize. So we recited it this morning. It's the Invocation of Kanzeon, and it's by Robert Aitken, who was John Tarrant's teacher, and of course John Tarrant was James Ford's teacher. So I'll read the whole thing and then comment on it. We call upon Kanzeon to inspire our sutra and our lives. We call upon ourselves to inspire Kanzeon. We call upon ourselves as Kanzeon. Enlightening, being enlightened, calling and responding, the birds and stars as Kanzeon save us, as they, as themselves, save us. Each thought, ever so brief, is Kanzeon herself turning the Dharma wheel. Acceptance is Kanzeon. Regarding the sounds of the world is Kanzeon. Kanzeon is realized in regarding the distress and pain everywhere, and is realized by the sound of geckos and children. The compassionate action of Kanzeon arises from the place of grateful receiving. I venerate the great power for the way, which is generated by the profound act of opening myself. Kanzeon, thus we bow to Buddha. So a few words about Kanzeon. As some of you know, she's the female embodiment in Chinese and Japanese Buddhism of Avalokiteshvara, who is the bodhisattva of compassion. And Kanzeon is part of the chant that we are used to doing, that the Kanzeon Sutra. In this Kanzeon Sutra, the Enmei Juku Kanon Gyo, we invoke the name of Kanzeon, or Kanon. In Chinese, she's called Guanyin, as the spirit of compassion, and we invoke it all day long. In the beautiful translation that we use, that I believe is from Josh, it says, "In the light, recall this. In the dark, recall this. Day after day, moment after moment, microsecond after microsecond, we recognize and call upon this spirit of compassion to help us in our practice. It's very important to have this spirit of compassion because it counteracts another spirit which is very strong in many of us, the spirit of judgment and criticism, the spirit of deciding that everything is terrible. And we can give evidence in chapter and verse about why everything is terrible. In one of the ways of understanding the Buddha, the awakened being, who historically was Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived 2,600 years ago, but in the Mahayana and the great vehicle teachings that Zen is a part of, we say that there are many Buddhas, in fact, infinite Buddhas throughout space and time. And sometimes we talk about the three bodies of the Buddha, the Nirmanakaya body, the body of activity, which is usually represented by the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni. And this is our stepping and eating and cooking and ringing bells and our doing in the world as expressions of the awakened nature. And there's the Dharmakaya, which is the body of the Dharma, of thusness, of the teachings, sometimes the body of emptiness. And then there's the Sambhogakaya, the body of bliss or joy, or sometimes it's translated as the body of appreciation. This body of appreciation is very related to Kanzeon and her appreciating, her hearing the sounds of the world, her seeing everything. Sometimes she's depicted as having 100 arms and 100 eyes to see the suffering of the world, to hear the suffering of the world. That's literally what her name means. And also with those 100 arms to reach out and comfort and actually act in the world through this compassionate heart. So in this invocation of Kanzeon from Robert Aitken, he says that Kanzeon can inspire us. It can inspire our sutra, that is, our recitation of these sutras and teachings, and our lives. And then he goes on to explain how to do that. And before he says that, and this is one of the things I love about this particular text, he says, we call upon ourselves to inspire Kanzeon. And this is a very important line, because there's a sense sometimes that we have that Kanzeon is outside of us, that we call to her in distress and she answers us. And there's some kind of a her and me going on here. But Robert Aitken is very careful to point out that there's no difference between Kanzeon and us. And then he goes on to give all kinds of examples. But it's important to know that the judging mind, the harsh mind, the mind that complains and finds life difficult, is no other than Kanzeon. This is hard to understand intellectually, but the more we sit, the more we recognize this. We receive the teachings that are boundlessly available in the universe in every moment. In this receiving, we recognize something. We recognize that we are not separate from this great spirit of compassion. The great Buddha fields, the great heart of the Mahayana, of the great vehicle, is built of kindness. It's built of compassion. It's not neutral. It has a sense in it of something, as I love to quote the Tibetan teachings that say, it's kindly bent to ease us. The whole world is full of nourishment, but because we divide ourselves from the world, we fail to see it. Because we divide ourselves from Kanzeon, we fail to see that we are this heart of compassion that demonstrates itself continuously as the appreciation body of the Buddha, as the way things are. So he says, we call upon ourselves as Kanzeon. We're not calling outward to something else. This is not a practice of separation in any way. We are the universe expressing itself. We are Kanzeon. We are everything we encounter. When we realize this, something shifts inside of us. The oppression and the separation begins to dissolve. We can't do it. It does it all by itself. It's just, you might say, waiting to do it, a little bit impatiently, waiting to do it, maybe very patiently, probably for all of us, very patiently. So he goes on to say, enlightening, being enlightened, calling and responding, the birds and stars, as Kanzeon, save us. We're saved by reality. We're not saved by something outside of ourselves. We are saved by the heart of compassion that is our birthright, that has been obscured and disguised and kept from us by the endless mental formations that arise and pass away and arise and pass away, disguising this great heart of compassion. And then he says, each thought, even this mind that makes these mental formations which can be so oppressive, that too is Kanzeon. Each thought, he says, ever so brief, is Kanzeon. So this is not a practice about trying to get rid of thoughts or thinking. It's not a practice about trying to get rid of anything. even the things we put in the category of not good. This is hard to understand because we want so much to be happy and peaceful. And what we begin to recognize in our Zen practice is that there is a happiness and a peacefulness that goes beyond happy and sad, peaceful and agitated. When we're sad, when we're agitated, that is Kanzan expressing itself. That is the awakened nature, this awakened heart of compassion expressing itself as sadness, as agitation, as anger or fear. These are not to be dismissed and put in a box and buried somewhere, and they'll creep up out of that box in the middle of the night and get us in our dreams. Nothing can be separated from this great awakened heart. And it's Kanzan herself turning the Dharma wheel that is expressing the teachings to us. If we can be with things as they are, then we can see what the Buddha was trying to tell us 2,600 years ago about the nature of reality. The teachings arise out of this not separating. We don't have to figure it out. It's not something to figure out with our discursive mind. It's something that comes to us and reveals itself. It is truly a revelation. Acceptance is Kanzan. Regarding the sounds of the world is Kanzan. Kanzan is realized in regarding the distress and pain everywhere. So some of us try to protect ourselves from the great suffering that's present in the world, but Aitken is telling us here not to do that. Don't protect yourself. Open your heart to this suffering, and in that suffering, in that distress that is everywhere, is Kanzan. Again, just waiting to be recognized, to be appreciated, to be seen as life itself unfolding. Terrible, heartbreaking, awful things. Don't put them aside in the little box. They're part of this great, complex, ever-functioning, ever-evolving universe. If we take one little piece out of the mix, then we've divided our hearts once again, and we are lost. And it's also, Aitken says, just in case you get too depressed by this, realized by the sounds of geckos and children. Aitken lived much of his life in Hawaii, so there were a lot of geckos making whatever sound geckos make. I don't know what they sound like. We saw some geckos recently, but they weren't making any sounds, so I still don't know. But we know what the sounds of children are. And the sounds of children are laughter and play, and also crying and distress. Animals, birds, stars, we ourselves come forth in perfect harmony, we say in another place. Everything expressing this compassionate heart of Kanzan. And then here's a key element in this teaching. The compassionate action of Kanzan arises from the place of grateful receiving. The compassionate heart of Kanzan arises from the place of grateful receiving. It arises all by itself. We don't have to do it. We set up conditions for us to recognize the arising by sitting upright in our Zazen posture, by coming to sittings, to practice periods, to retreats, to sesshin. We set these conditions up, but the arising is happening all the time on its own, and the conditions allow us to see it and to receive it, and not just to receive it, because there's a way of receiving some of the terrible things in the world with resignation or a slight sense of despair and complaint. This is different than that. This is gratefully receiving. That's a koan all by itself. If you want to work on a koan, that's a great one. How do I gratefully receive suffering without twisting my head into all these little little machinations to try to figure it out. It's not like that. It's a recognition. Gratitude also arises naturally. We don't have to force it. And it's important to remember that this grateful receiving is one part of the great mix of reality, but being ungrateful, being upset, being resigned and angry is also the great heart of true and trusting arising in this moment. So this is a little bit hard to understand, but we practice it. We practice receiving. We practice noticing the arising of everything as reality. We practice recognizing when gratitude begins to come into the mix of receiving. And then it's an invocation. So at the end he says, I venerate the great power for the way. This great heart of Kanzeon is, as I said earlier, not neutral. And it has great, great energy contained in it. It runs the whole universe. It beats our hearts and circulates our blood and makes all of our organs function. It breathes us. It feeds us. It nourishes us in every conceivable way. It's so powerful, and it has brought every one of us to practice. We think we did it. We did do it in the sense that we are part of the whole universe. But we, as a little ego self, didn't do anything. All we can do as little ego selves is open ourselves to receiving. That's it. Set up the conditions, start the receiving, and then see what happens. And he says, when we venerate this great power of the way, this great power of the way is generated by the profound act of opening myself. Receiving is profound, and it requires an opening that means that we have to see through all the protections that we've generated over the many years of our lives to protect our tender hearts. The tender hearts won't be damaged by anything. They have great power. Once everything is dropped away and everything is open, we'll know that for ourselves. It's not something that can be even spoken. And yet, we use words to speak it. So at the end, Aitken says, Kanzeon. Just that one word. With an exclamation point. It's like saying, Kanzeon, wow. Kanzeon, Kanzeon, Kanzeon. This moment of receiving is everything. This moment of opening is everything. And the only response is to bow. And so thus we bow to Buddha. We call upon Kanzeon to inspire our sutra and our lives. We call upon ourselves to inspire Kanzeon. We call upon ourselves as Kanzeon. Enlightening, being enlightened, calling and responding, the birds and stars as Kanzeon save us. As they, as themselves, save us. Each thought, ever so brief, is Kanzeon herself turning the Dharma wheel. Acceptance is Kanzeon. Regarding the sounds of the world is Kanzeon. Kanzeon is realized in regarding the distress and pain everywhere and is realized by the sound of geckos and children. The compassionate action of Kanzeon arises from the place of grateful receiving. I venerate the great power for the way which is generated by the profound act of opening myself. Kanzeon. Thus we bow to Buddha. Thank you. And so we're going to have our Dharma dialogue now, and that means you can set yourself at ease and look around and raise your hand and ask questions or make comments.
I heard a podcast just the other day, I think, in this your talk. It was kind of percolating in me anyway, and this talk brought it out, and it was about a medical condition that very few people have, but it's such that there's no... they can feel the emotions of other people without any filter. They don't know whether it's their feeling or the other person's feeling. And they interviewed this woman, and her response to it was that she found life so painful because everywhere she went, you know, she was just absorbing everyone's feelings, and she didn't know where she ended and other people began. It got really overwhelming for her. So her way to deal with this was to just stay in her house and never leave, and just surround herself with just, she had family and children, and just to be with them, you know, like who she felt like she could be safe with. Like, she wouldn't even go to her children's activities at school or anything. But then she had a daughter who had the same condition, and the daughter didn't want to admit to it, but in this interview, it was clear that the daughter had the very same thing. It would be like if someone, you know, hit you in the face, you would feel it. If someone hit someone else in the face, you would physically feel the sensation. But the daughter, the reason she didn't want to admit to it is that she didn't want to separate herself from the world, from her life, from experience. And so she was trying to, like, deny the reality of this condition so that she wouldn't end up like her mother. Like, it was too important to her to actually live her life, you know? And so what the talk, like, sort of brought, you know, filtered into this for me, because, you know, when we are willing to open our hearts, you know, to others, it can be really painful, right? You know, and even the world itself, you know, so much of the world we live in, we just have, like, way too much information about all these horrible things going on everywhere, and it just can feel really painful all the time. And even, you know, when we open ourselves to our own, you know, experience and thought processes, you know, there's just a, you know, tendency, I think, you know, that we want to shut down to, like, protect ourselves, you know, that there's this little self that we need to protect from all of this, you know. And so the sutra about, you know, opening the heart, like the receiving part of it, seems so key as, like, a counterpoint to being afraid, because it seems like the fear is what is, you know, that you're is the opposite weight of it. You know, like, fear is a human response. You know, there's nothing wrong in it. Of course, we wouldn't survive probably without having some kind of fear. But then the receiving and closing, you know, the fear and the trusting the heart. So,
thank you. Yeah, I think you're pointing to something really important, Diane. Mm-hmm. You know, meditation practice, Zen practice, does sensitize us to the world. Mm-hmm. We actually feel more when we practice, in case you thought you were going to feel less. and so it's important to not get caught in that self-protective fear. Mm-hmm. Well, to see the self-protective fear as the arising of the heart-mind, right? Mm-hmm. And there's I was just reading a book about neuropsychiatry, and there is, apparently everybody has this capacity. If somebody else hurts themselves, they've done brain scans, the brain that sees this reacts as if we were hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe you, this has happened to you. You know, you see somebody hurt themselves, and, like, actually all the neural circuitry fires in you. Mm-hmm. So there already is this thing happening, and it sounds like this woman has a very extreme version of something that's normal. Mm-hmm. But most of us deal with that by cutting ourselves off. Mm-hmm. And what this practice is suggesting is opening. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Opening more than we already are.
Yeah.
And recognizing this connection that we have to suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why practices that emphasize just being happy are missing a lot of the elements of this revelatory practice, mm-hmm. in my mm-hmm. humble opinion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, Christine.
It's interesting, Diane, when I'm sitting, I can't tell the difference between if it's someone else's stomach growling or mine. And I've often noticed that the more I sit. And also that I love the ending of this, the opening myself. And your talk is so wonderful. I have only come to realize recently that my way of, one of my ways, because there's many ways, but one of my ways of protecting myself has been to lacerate my mind, to lacerate my heart when it feels some sense of danger, whether real or projected. And I'm blown away by that. And I am drinking in the that part of your talk about the bravery. I mean, or maybe it's not bravery, but I mean the openness of the heart is its own protection. Am I understanding?
Yes, that's a great way to put it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's the openness of the heart is its own protection. I love that. I didn't say that, but I meant it.
Well, it feels like James Ford's book, If You're Lucky, Your Heart Will Break.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
And that's the true and trusting.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, picking up on that, at the end he talks about the power for the way. So this arising of suffering or the arising of the breaking heart it has enormous energy, right? And we close it down and it takes enormous energy to close it down, and then we're exhausted all the time because it takes so much energy to close our heart, right? And this possibility that we could open our heart and then even the suffering, whatever arises, is the power of life. And of course we cry and feel sad, but it's not a problem. Yeah, life expressing itself, and then we're alive in the midst of it. Yeah.
So I'd like to talk about snow. You know, when David gave me the shovel of snow, Samu, this morning, I was like, you know, I explained what my intention was going to be, and I was going to really be in it. But I don't want to shovel anymore. I don't move shoveling stuff. So when I went out there, it was this very interesting kind of encounter. And I was listening to the crunching snow, and I was observing some world sounds. But it actually got me thinking about a comment that I think is echoed or echoes what Aitken is saying, which is from Shohaku Okumura's book, Living by Bauer, and he's talking about the Heart Sutra in particular, and we're reading it in our gang down in Providence, and it's just a very simple little sentence, which is everything and everyone is Avalokiteshvara. And it's become a really interesting form of practice to feel the toes getting colder and the root taking longer and any of a number of things being opportunities to practice. The nagging stuff, not the world problems which can bring me down, but all the day, the snow, as I said earlier, the snow. And what's so interesting, as Christine mentioned this too, is that there's something, it doesn't make your toes warmer, but it changes your relationship to cold toes.
Yes.
It's very hard to articulate.
No, that's beautifully articulated. That's it. Yeah.
And by the way, the Benevolent Street sign is going to start making t-shirts that say, I'm with Avalokiteshvara with an arrow. So that you can take it out of town. People that you would otherwise think is nagging stupid problems.
But that's a really important point, Chris, you know, that many people in the world today think that meditation is supposed to, warm your toes. It's a nice way of putting it. But what it really does is it gives you a new relationship to cold toes. So, you know, it's supposed to make you happy, but what it really does is give you a new relationship to sadness. It's this other way of encountering reality. Not trying to force your own will on it, but receiving. Which is what you did. And I hadn't realized how cold the wind chill was when David gave you that assignment.
Hope
you're
okay. Actually, I was very aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Oh, David was too.
But I like how you connect sort of this global suffering, because we can think, oh my God, such terrible things, and people starving and freezing to death. And I can go into, well, as soon as I get over my irritation, I'll start working on compassion. Right? And how this practice really calls us to work in the moment, in the intimacy. It's the exact same thing going on. How dare you say that? Or I can't believe I have to. Why did he tell me to show? You know, whatever. But to the opportunity to open our heart with what's here. We don't have to find the right thing to open our heart to. Well, let me find something really profound, and then I'll, you know. But
just to get all the assholes out of the way.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So important, this practicing with what's right here and seeing it. Oh, yeah.
So we're embodying this being of Kanzeyan and celebrating this compassionate aspect that is the fundamental nature, right? And includes everything, and there's nothing outside of Kanzeyan. And we're celebrating the compassion and acceptance and kindness, but we're also saying that it includes the opposite of those characteristics, right? The hard-heartedness and the lack of compassion and anger and being depressed about how things are, and that these things, this arising of self is the thing that prevents us from seeing this fundamental compassion that is Kanzeyan. So what comes up for me is, okay, so then it's Kanzeyan that is blinding me to this view of compassion.
Yeah.
Right?
And I have a lot of trouble getting my head around that. So this you know, lack of compassion for my fellow beings and for the difficult sides of myself are in fact Kanzeyan blinding me to this compassionate reality. So what sense does that make? We think of Kanzeyan as being the compassionate one who hears the cries of the world and is, you know, full of compassion, but actually there's this other side of Kanzeyan is appearing in the form of distress and self-centeredness and blindness. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like really hard to understand from the conceptual mind that divides things in pieces, and that some of the distortion in this is thinking that there's a me that's being blinded by something else, but just blindness is occurring, and there's a certain point when these divisions start dropping away. You know, that's what the promise of this practice is really, nothing really changes. Our toes are still cold. But there's this new relationship. So is saying Kanzan is blinding me. Actually, that's pretty accurate. It's blinding the little part of this vastness that I identify, this little limited piece in the great vastness that makes categories, is being blinded. That's really true. But once you see through that, it begins to shift and change, and then there's just this navigating through our lives, moment after moment. Now crap, now beauty, now, you know, this, now that, now blindness, now revelation. It doesn't matter quite as much, and it matters a lot, and it's all comes down. And you can see how the little me really tries to figure it out, and it doesn't make any sense, because the little me makes not me. But there is no not me. You know, conventionally there is, thank goodness. We have to, you know, as what was Okamura's teacher?
Uchiyama
says nobody can fart for you. that sort of thing. There actually is separation. But you still see these that the separation is just kind of conventional and allows us to move through the world so that we don't disturb the world too much with our insistence on everything as one, because that would be, that's the little me making everything as one. Right? So it's all these things together. Yeah, I mean, what you're pointing out is the reason we practice, because we have to realize this, we can't figure it out. It just doesn't make sense. And you've realized it again and again. When you speak from the heart mind, you know this. But it we can't sustain that.
And the invitation is, of course, we're always practicing koan practice. We may think we're doing shikantaza, but the koan of our life, you know, the koan when we try to figure it out, even after we have some insight, it doesn't hold up. You know, it actually, this doesn't really make sense. And Steve, you're so wonderful. You sort of bring that up. You know, everybody's confluent. Oh, yeah, this is really... And then you say, well, really?
Wait a minute.
and really, no, it doesn't make sense. But the invitation is, what if these teachings are not deceiving us? What if it is really true? And I don't understand how it could be true. It doesn't make sense to me either. But as Melissa was saying, we can encounter this, and we can know it in our hearts, and without a doubt, and still it doesn't make sense. But this great invitation is not about believing this. The invitation is not to convince yourself that this is true, but the invitation is, what if it is? In the midst of me being my worst self, most contracted, most opinionated, just the possibility of practice, like, wow, what if Kanzan is manifesting completely?
Yeah. As this.
As this, right.
And you know, it's also like most of us flip back and forth between, once we've had any kind of opening, between the Dharmakaya and the Nirmanakaya, like we just keep going back and forth between, oh, thusness, openness, and shovel that snow, and oh, and shovel that snow. And I think the appreciation body is something we tend to bypass, this great force that unites them in a way and flavors them. Without it, it's very dry practice. And Zen is very big in the appreciation body, you know, the stories, the koans, the chanting, the bells. There's such a mystery that you can't just sink into these two. You can't make the opposites anymore. It doesn't let you make the opposites. That's part of what happens. Janine, did you have your hand up?
Well, I did. I was just sitting with the importance of the response to that, because you can get kind of lulled into a dead zone where you just receive and figure this is what is to be, is to just receive. And lose the impulse to respond with action when that's the better course. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting thing too, I think, with this, to let that come out when it's supposed to come out, and to not say, well, this is just all it's going to be and ever will be, and my response is to do nothing always.
Right. It's another distortion to think that receiving is just sitting back, but it's calling and responding. It's very much embedded in this practice. Yeah, Zen is about spontaneity and presence, and that kind of practice you're describing, which people really do misunderstand. They go the other direction, as you say. It has no power for the way. It's actually, you can feel it. It's a diminution of power and energy. Yeah.
You can get into that almost a nihilism.
Right, dead sitting. Yeah.
And so when the toes get really cold, it's important to come in.
To warm your toes.
Yeah,
right.
Otherwise you get frostbitten toes.
Yeah. And if you're angry or sad or frustrated or fearful, it's important to open to that and see what to do. Maybe you don't have to be stuck in those things. Absolutely. But you don't want to knee-jerk it. That's the thing. So the receiving allows you to have more of a sense of what to actually go forward and
do. That wisdom to know the difference.
Huh? Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So let's finish this round and do some walking.